Yes, this is Talk Story, Maui's longest running talk show. I'm so happy to be able to talk with Katie from the marketing department at the Maui Humane Society, MauiHumaneSociety.org. There's a lot going on, a lot of news, a lot happening. You just got back. You were at a big conference, which I can't even imagine how it was like in North Carolina, where everyone got together and talked about the latest in animal care. And you met a lot of people probably from a lot of the humane societies there.
Yeah,
as well?
Thank you so much for having me, Cindy.
Yeah, it's always good seeing you.
The Best Friends Conference was amazing. It's just so wonderful to gather so much information from the leading shelters in the nation.
I bet.
You know, and a lot of humane societies are going through the same issues of large populations, housing crises, and you know, it's just really great to hear from the leading shelters what they have to say, and different implementations that they recommend us to do to get more animals into homes.
Do you get ideas that way when you network that way with other people about what you can do to help what you're doing here on Maui?
Absolutely.
Groups, yeah.
Yeah. It's wonderful, whether it's about storytelling and really becoming the voice of the animals, whether it's different programs to implement or just different barriers to break down to help animals get into homes.
Well, on top of that, it seems like there's some national foundation sometimes that can help out you might not even know about, that you can find out about to get some funding for some programs going to some of these conferences, right?
Right. We have opportunities to apply to grants that will help us, you know, keep low cost down, whether it's low cost or zero fees for adoptions or low cost spay and neuters. And also community assists. You know, our Forever Pets program helps anyone going through financial hardship and wants to keep their pets in their home. That's what we want for them. So
that's such an important project. I'm just going to go at least a minute or two into that, because I don't know if a lot of people are aware of this. I mean, of course, I'm aware that you have had a very difficult few years. We never thought COVID would be going on as long as it is. The COVID factor definitely is something that's happening with animals when we went from lockdown to getting back to work. But then there's also the economic fallout that we're feeling. Really, costs of everything going up. And I imagine pet food, too. I haven't even checked much lately, but how much has pet food gone up in the last year?
I think it depends on what you're buying.
Yeah.
But, you know, we understand that people are struggling financially. And that's also why we want to drop adoption fees. And that's actually leading into empty the shelters.
Empty those shelters. You know, you have so many animals here. Oh, my gosh. It's amazing when I was reading about how many animals you have. You have 60 guinea pigs. Is that a record?
Yeah, 60 guinea pigs. And rabbits. It's unlike a population for guinea pigs and rabbits we've ever seen before.
Well, there was a couple of people that had to let their rabbits go. I guess there was a move or something that happened. And all of a sudden, you have all these rabbits. And you have 50 dogs and you have 100 kittens.
And that's just in the shelter.
Yeah.
That doesn't account for all of our wonderful fosters who have been taking care of our dogs and our guinea pigs and our rabbits and our kittens. We have over 200 kittens in foster right now. So.
Oh, do you really that much?
Mm-hmm. Yep, we're in kitten season. So
wow.
We've got 100 at the shelter ready to go home. And
when you say ready, they've been spayed, neutered, shots, and everything?
Yep.
Ready, can you say that?
2 months old, 2 pounds, healthy, spayed and neutered, ready to go home. So, I mean, if you've ever thought about adopting a kitten, now's the time.
Oh, my gosh. You know, it's hard to even imagine trying to deal with this, and I had no idea you have as many kittens out fostering as you do there in the shelter.
Yeah, well, more.
More.
Yep, because we want to make sure, of course, that when the kittens are ready to go home, that they have everything that they need.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why fostering is so important, because it allows us to be a shelter outside of the shelter. It gives animals the opportunity to be socialized. It allows them to develop in the environment that they're going to be living in. That's why we don't want animals to be sitting around in the shelter.
No.
It's hectic. It's stressful. And you know what? There's a lot of behaviors that we see in the shelter that don't exist at home. And so you know, fostering really is life-saving.
What kind of person do you see wanting, I guess, how would you describe a typical foster person that takes in an animal for their home? Is it someone that can't keep their own pets or because of their living situation, or someone here temporarily, or someone who travels but wants to have a pet when they're there? How would you describe the typical foster parent?
You know what? I don't know if there's a typical one, because anyone can be a foster. Anyone that wants to spend time with an animal, mm-hmm. Especially within their own home, that's who a foster is. So if you want to just share your love, you're a foster. It's really as simple as that. Mm-hmm. And fostering is so wonderful because we provide there's no cost associated with it. We provide all the supplies that you need.
Well, for a guinea pig, though, you wouldn't provide a cage, would you?
Sometimes it depends. Yeah. It really depends also on the person's situation. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to deny somebody to take an animal into their home. And it's an opportunity to kind of see what they want and what kind of bond that they're looking to have. You know, sometimes they want to hang out with, you know, an old senior dog who is super chill and, you know, wants to just cuddle up. Sometimes they want kittens and they've got a spare bathroom, or they just have a bathroom that they can allow some kittens to socialize and really learn how to kitten, if you will. So
during this time now, this is going to be going July 11th through the 31st. So we're in it now. And this is a national adoption event. So you're also joining in with the whole group of humane societies around the whole country, right?
Yes. So there's 250 shelters across the nation, across 42 states that are participating in Empty the Shelters. And this is through Bissell Pet Foundation. And Kathy Bissell is so passionate about animals. And, you know, the purpose of this is to get rid of adoption fees, so that a cost is not a barrier to get animals into homes. And that's why it's awesome. Mm-hmm. Any dog, any cat, any kitten, guinea pig, rabbit, zero adoption fees. It's by donation only.
I think that's wonderful. I mean, it still amazes me sometimes that people will go out to a pet shop and buy a pet when you can, and you know, people know that there are pets that need loving homes. You know, I don't understand that. You know, I mean, I don't know. I don't understand why people would go buy a pet when there's so many loving animals waiting for the perfect home. So, I mean, I'm putting that out there. I'm sure some people think that if it's a pedigreed pet or something, I don't know. But please remember, if you're thinking of a pet, or maybe you're not even thinking, but you just go ? Light bulb over the head. Hey, I could do a foster. Maybe I should check this out and see what works with me, you know. And it's funny, you've seen this. I know you've seen it. There's certain people that are cat people. There's certain people that are dog people. And I think there are certain people who are rabbit people and maybe guinea pig people too, you know. We all relate to different kinds of animals. But right now with this bunny situation, I mean, it's pretty mind-blowing, 60 guinea pigs and rabbits right now.
Yeah.
So, which is going to lead into what's going on with the rabbits. I was blown away when I read your newsletter. I tell everyone, go to MauiHumaneSociety.org. Your newsletter is amazing. It's a world-class entertainment newsletter.
Thank you.
You do a great job with the newsletter. And some bunny to love came up. I saw that on the newsletter, and I just laughed. I mean, of course, I like Queen, and I like Somebody to Love, but I mean, some bunny to love. I said to him, who came up with that brilliant idea? We all need some bunny to love. And it was you. I have to congratulate you. Brilliant, brilliant line. But right now, there are a lot of bunnies that need some love.
Yes.
And there's also a problem going on with bunnies that is shocking. I mean, I heard about this. I'm going, where in the world did this come from? But there was, 3 weeks ago, they found a rabbit somewhere on Maui.
Yep. On June 17th, it was confirmed that a rabbit up in Kula had contracted rabbit hemorrhaging disease virus 2, which we abbreviate as RHDV2. And it's a fatal disease to rabbits, and it can be passed through anything, essentially, that it can be passed from rabbit to rabbit. Humans can have it on either on their clothing or on their hands. It can be passed from insect to rabbit. It's not an wow. issue for humans, so humans don't have to worry about getting sick from it, but it is fatal, and that we can pass it from rabbit to rabbit.
And I'd never heard of anything like this. Had you heard of anything like this before?
No.
I'd never heard of this before.
No, and it's relatively new to Hawaii. So the first case was in 2020, and then this June.
In Hawaii?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yep, and then this June, I believe, was the first on Maui.
Oh, gosh. So this is a devastating thing. No one wants their pet to get it. So you have taken some really important action, which is you're going to be doing this vaccination clinic. And this is going to be for the Some Bunny to Love campaign to help promote the adoption of rabbits, and their public the public vaccination event's happening July 23rd.
Yes.
At your shelter.
Yep. So you can just go right onto our website. You'll see that there is a homepage web tile, same with Empty the Shelters, that talks about the rabbit vaccination. It also gives a little bit more information about this disease. And that, you know, you don't have to panic. I know it sounds scary, but this vaccination could save your rabbit's life. And so we've opened up a lot more appointments because we know that there are a lot of rabbits out here on Maui. And because we have actually filled so many of those, we know that there's going to be another vaccine clinic coming up. So just stay tuned. Mm-hmm. For those who have adopted from Maui Humane Society a rabbit before, we will actually be reaching out to you directly. So just give us a little bit of time. We're just trying to finalize a date, but we'll have something for you. For the public, just book an appointment online. It should be as simple as that. And we will likely have a wait list if anybody is not able to make the appointment. But at the same time, we have an abundant amount of rabbits, and we want everyone to know that all of the rabbits in Maui Humane Society have received their first vaccine as of July 1st.
Mm-hmm.
If you're interested in adopting a rabbit, that we highly recommend, and you know, we'd love for you to connect with them. They're safe. They just have to come in for their secondary dose. So it's a two-part series vaccine to make sure that your rabbit is protected.
And I can't believe how easily this thing spreads. I mean, that's kind of shocking how it could be even from any piece of fabric of clothes or anything. But thank God people don't get it. But my gosh, it's just a tough thing to have if you love your pet as many. Oh, man, I know people who just adore their rabbits. So you got to protect your rabbit. You're pretty much almost full at this point.
Yeah. So, I mean, we still have some. We probably have about 20 open slots.
Okay. So people should go to MauiHumaneSociety.org ASAP.
Yes. And we were just in the newspaper this past weekend, Maui News. And so if you have a copy from, is today Tuesday?
Yes, it is.
It's also in today's news.
I know how that is when you travel.
Yeah.
Today is Tuesday. It's a full moon tonight. Tonight, tomorrow, supermoon. Yeah,
supermoon.
Supermoon, yeah.
But if people are also nervous about having their rabbits there at Maui Humane Society with this going on, you can reserve a carrier so that you can pick it up on the 15th or the 16th. So you can reserve a carrier, pick it up on the 15th or 16th so that when you bring your rabbit to the vaccine clinic, your rabbit will be in a carrier. And we advise all rabbits to be in a carrier when they come.
Oh, yeah. You don't, yeah. Mm-hmm. Especially with this thing going on. And I even asked you, I said, well, how do you know how safe it is with other rabbits around? And they said, you got that covered. You're going to keep all the rabbits separate and they'll be in their carrier. And you'll make sure with your team down there that they don't get close to something that could get infected or anything.
Right.
This is when I heard about this. I thought, oh, my God, we got to talk about this because I've never heard of anything like this. I mean, you hear about dog problems all the time, dog diseases and stuff, you know, but I've never heard of a bunny disease that's as radical as this is. So, I mean, this is why I wanted you to really come in and let people know about it. It's really, really important. And I guess till then, what can people do to try to protect their rabbits at home until the time they can get vaccinated? What would you recommend they do?
So making sure that, like, isolating the rabbits in terms of if they decide to, you know, adopt another rabbit, we just want to keep those rabbits separate until everybody has been fully vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't mean, you know, you can't introduce a new furry family member into your home. And also just keep watch of your rabbits, right? If they show any signs of the disease, to make sure that they call their vet immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not pretty.
Could other animals infect them? Is there any signs of that?
No, it's just, it is only fatal for rabbits. But, you know, I will disclose I am not in the medical field, mm-hmm. so I am not an expert in this. We do have a medical director who, you know, immediately implemented us to ensure that we had safety precautions, you know, up to speed if we needed to change anything. And, you know, it seemed like we were all good, which is, you know, all of our rabbits have been safe. They've been vaccinated with one of the vaccines. So, you know, just keep an eye on your rabbit. And if you just make sure you're washing your hands a lot. And if you are touching your rabbit, just make sure, you know, you kind of understand where you've been and, you know, what that potentially means for your rabbit. But that's also why we want you to get the vaccine, just to make sure that your rabbit is going to stay safe.
Yeah, not for you, the vaccine, the rabbit vaccine.
Yes.
For the rabbit. We have enough vaccines and the other things that like we have to deal with. I mean, you know, truthfully, they are seeing some people saying now that animals can also get COVID. Mm. And dogs can. That's they've proven that dogs can get COVID. So it's like you got to be careful of stuff like that as well, you know. I mean, it's a whole new idea and concept that you have to be really careful about there. Now, let's talk about what really is important, which is you are down there trying to do good and trying to help people. You really need to have some money, donations, fundraisers, anything people can do. It's really been a difficult year as far as trying to keep everything going with all of the people trying to help. Still, the animals take a lot of food. It takes a lot of money to run the Maui Humane Society. Once I heard the budget for the year, and it blew me away, Katie. It blew me away how much money it takes to run the Maui Humane Society. It's a massive amount of money, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, we see and help over 4,500 animals a year. Last year and this past previous year, we had almost 1,700 adoptions, which means we gave 1,700 animals a second chance at, you know, at a life, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, we did over 8,000 surgeries last year.
That's a lot.
A lot. And, you know, they're not necessarily just the spay and neuter surgeries. They are above and beyond as well. They are the medical procedures that will save the animal's life. We have an unbelievable medical team. I mean, everybody that works at Maui Humane Society is dedicated. They love animals. And, you know, what we're able to do at Maui Humane Society is really some of leading in the nation. And I know that people might hear or think that that's, you know, Maui's leading in something. You know, they say that Hawaii is often behind. No, Maui Humane Society is doing some pretty unbelievable programs, including our Wings of Aloha. We've got such an extensive foster program. Our Forever Pets helping our community. We have an extensive volunteer program. We've got our TNR program for trap, neuter, release for our cats, our community cats. We really are doing a lot down here, and we need the community's support. And we can't do this without the community. So, you know, we just want to thank the community for all that they do, for being a part of what we offer to them. And also just understanding, you know, we have been short-staffed due to COVID, and so any patients that they have for us there, just know at the end of the day, we want the best for your animals, and that means the best for you too.
I absolutely agree. I know you actually have been thinking more and more about HANA, and I love that. You did a HANA clinic. You're going to be doing another HANA clinic, I think, coming up soon, right?
Yes. So I think the clinic that initially you might be thinking of is the HANA Good Fix that we went out to HANA with Greater Good Fix and did over 350 spay and neuters and medical exams for our community out in HANA, which is amazing. On July 29th, the Forever Pets team with Dr. Gaines, our medical director, is going to be going out and handing out pet food and collars and flea medication, also giving out the vaccine for any rabbits out there.
What date is that again?
July 29th. Okay. They'll be at Ahana's Farmer's Market from 12 to 4.
Is that a weekend? No, it's Friday, isn't it?
Friday, yeah.
Friday. So Ahana folks, or any friends that have Ahana folks, this is important. covering Hannah and getting out there on the 28th. And that's not an easy thing. You got to get out there with all the things that you need, and it's nice to know that you get the vaccination there for the rabbits on the 29th.
29th, yep.
You can always go to MauiHumaneSociety.org and get all this information. Tell me about the calendar. It's always one of the most popular things that happens. Everyone loves your pet calendar. I know you started, it seemed like you started about 3 weeks ago. How's that going?
So it ended. I know, right?
Is it we're already?
We're already halfway through July.
Wow.
I know.
Wow. So tell, how'd that go?
Wonderful. The community had a great time. It was like a buzzer beater at the very end.
I like that term, the buzzer beater. I like that.
But it was awesome. We saw more submissions this past year than last year. And we almost doubled our goal, which is incredible because this means that we're able to help so, so many animals. But the calendar will compromise of, 12, the top 12 who received the most votes. But every submission will be a part of the calendar in some way, shape, or form.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
How do you do that?
Yeah, you just submit.
It sounds like, no, I mean, that's a lot of pictures.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's why we've got some graphic designers and marketers back on our team. And the calendar will be available for purchase at the latest in November. But, of course, we'll be making announcements when that's available. But it's always a really great holiday gift to be able to give to your family and
friends. Do the people know that the top 12, if they got on the calendar or not? They know?
Oh, yeah.
It's a big deal, huh?
Oh, yeah.
You got, what kind of animals did you get for that?
We got, so initially we thought it was just going to be the majority dogs. We almost had, it seemed like the first week and a half, it seemed like there were mostly dogs. And then we got the fill-in from the cats, which we were like, we need some diversity in here. And then we got like a goat on a surfboard.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And we did have rabbits and guinea pigs. And so we did see diversity in there. Goodness. Because,
No horses?
You know what? There might be.
There's some people love their horses here. That would be something that I would think would be great to see your horse on a calendar.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, that's I'm glad that went well.
Yeah.
I'm really glad that went well. You know, the Humane Society is such a part of our lives, and I know you had done the fur ball before. You've had to put that off. And you know what? Originally, I was hoping you were going to do the fur ball again, but you know what? I think you were right. With everything going on and everything, I know you had to delay it again this year. And it's kind of a hard call. But I really think that probably you did the right thing to do that. I got someone calling. I think they're calling early, but let me see if this is... Aloha, who's this?
Oh, hi, this is Dwayne Pitadillo from the Modern Music Quartet.
Oh, okay. Hold on a minute, Dwayne. You're a couple minutes early, but just hold on, okay?
Sure, I'll stand by.
Okay, yeah. All right. So... we're going to be talking to Dwayne in just a second here, but I want to really encourage people to get a hold of the Maui Humane Society. Get signed up for the newsletter.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. It's wonderful. If you like pictures of animals, you've got the cutest pictures that tells you everything that's going on. You can find out about all the clinics that are happening. You can find out, exactly what's going on with the Some Bunny to Love and the different vaccinations. Also keep track of what's happening with Empty the Shelter and the next one that'll be coming up, Forever Pets in Hana on July 29th at the Hana Farmers Market. All of that's going to be there.
And I know that you had mentioned furball. So we won't be doing furball this year, but there will be an event happening at the beginning of October that we want people to stay tuned for. So
is that a hint? That's a tease.
Yeah, a little.
Okay, Katie's teasing. Okay, you got my curiosity. I'm as curious as a cat. Meow. Okay, you're going to have to tell me about that.
Sure will.
Okay. Always good seeing you, Katie. Thank you for coming in.
Thank you, Cindy.
A big aloha. And now I have on the line, I've been checking out your group, Mana Music Quartet, Dwayne, and it's a very interesting group, and you've got a great story about it. You know, I'm a member of the Nohoku Hanohanos. In fact, I'm nominated this year. In the religious category, I'm going over November 20th. Are you going to be there this year?
We haven't had anything new, but I still might go to the party just to hang out.
Yeah. Well, you got an award last year at the Nohoku Hanohano, and you're not your typical group. You're a music quartet, and you did this amazing album. You're going to be doing a concert, The Music of Queen Liliuokalani, happening at the McCoy Theater, 7:30 on Saturday, July 30th. And it's really lovely hearing that music done with a kind of chamber music style. And you'll also be doing Brahms as well, right?
Oh, yeah, we're going to do a Brahms string quintet with a guest violinist who is actually one of my former students. I met her when she was 3 years old, and now she's all grown up and 25 and playing in some several orchestras on the mainland, but she'll be home. And I thought it would be fun if we invited her to join our group for the grand finale song on the concert. Yeah.
So tell me about your group.
Oh, so the Mana Music Quartet, it was sort of by accident. So I have been friends for a long time with the cellist Josh Nakazawa. And he had a random corporate music gig on the USS Missouri. And it just so happened that my friends, now friends, Eric and Man Nguyen, who I had not met before, they were like touring soloists, violinists, and they happened to be touring the islands with the Tango Band, of all things. and so they were around, and Josh needed two extra violinists to cover the gig. And so he said, after your big tango concert, I think they had it on Big Island and Blue Note and all these places, why don't you just come and join us for a little bit of extra cash? I got this corporate gig on the USS Missouri. So that's how we all met. And then after the gig, we went over to Josh's for drinks and stuff. And, you know, as musicians tend to do, we said, oh, let's jam on something. And just by serendipity, I had made an arrangement of one of the Queen Liliuokalani songs just as a hobby. I had, like, the day before, I just sketched this thing out just for no reason. I thought it would be fun. And I had it on my iPad. So I was like, hey, why don't we just read this together? And then it just, in the magic of the moment, it became very clear that this music was beautiful and important and something needed to happen about it. And then a stroke of what was maybe bad luck for most of the world, but sort of good luck for us, is a COVID hit. And then it became unsafe for Man Nguyen and Eric to fly back home to New York City. So Josh generously said, oh, you can crash on my couch for a few days until this thing blows over. And they ended up crashing on his couch for a good 9 months until November.
Oh, my gosh.
And in the process, what are we going to do? You know, because we were all locked up together, right? So we fell in love with the Queen's music. And so they asked me if I had any more stuff lying around. And I said, no, but let me do some research. So the album actually was just a COVID project. I think I would write an arrangement on Sunday, and we'd rehearse it, record it on Friday, and then repeat the process. And in 15 weeks, we had the album. So that was sort of the Queen bringing us together to play her music. So it was kind of a magical experience, actually.
Well, I definitely believe it is. I feel very aligned with her words and her music, because she was a poet as well, and obviously a lyricist. And there is something that is so full of aloha, so beautiful about her music, and to be able to capture it. I mean, it's been done different ways, but I don't know if I've ever heard it done by a chamber group like yours. You have Joshua on cello, Eric on violin. You have another violinist in Manuel Lo, and then you do viola.
I'm playing viola, yes.
Yeah.
Well, the interesting thing, because I also play in another band, the Sovereign Strings, and which is run by a luthier researcher, Kylan Reese. And, you know, believe it or not, the violin was a lead instrument in Hawaiian folk music around the 1850s.
I had no idea.
And that tradition has sort of been forgotten. I mean, the most famous example that anybody ever remembers is Sam Lea. He was a very famous Hawaiian fiddler based on the Big Island. His most famous tune is Hi'ilawe, the Gabi Pahi Nui anthem that everybody knows. That was actually written by Sam Lea, Hawaiian fiddler.
Wow.
And he passed away before there was any recordings of anybody playing Hawaiian fiddle. So this music isn't recorded. It's sort of a lost tradition. So that sort of sparked my interest. I actually have a funny story. I got a call one day. There was a Hawaiian musician who was in hospice, and they asked me and my friend to come play for him. He only had a couple days to live, so I thought, oh, okay, I'll be nice. I'll go. I don't know who this guy is, but I'll go visit him and play some music. Maybe I'll cheer him up. It turned out to be Eddie Kamai.
Wow.
On his deathbed.
Oh.
And when I saw him, me and my friend were playing some swing tunes, and the first thing he said was, your playing reminds me of my fiddler friend Sam Lea from Big Island. We used to do a lot of music together. And that just, like, really? Hawaiian fiddle? Eddie and Sam used to play a lot of music together, of ukulele and fiddle. And so that sort of got my brain thinking. And then very soon after that, I got the call from Kylan Reese to play with Sovereign Strings. And then this idea to do Queen Lillicott's Connie's music sort of materialized, and I thought, what a perfect way to set that, to try to reimagine what Hawaiian string playing might have been like at that era. Because what's also not commonly known is that Queen Liliuokalani actually is the link between Hawaiian local music and Western classical music. She was very deeply schooled in Western classical music tradition by Henry Berger when she was a kid.
Oh, really?
They sort of forced her to take 8 hours of music theory, solfège, wow, and everything, the whole nine yards. Her and all of her siblings were, yeah, they had classes many hours a day in Western classical music training.
I did not know that. So that's where she had that background to be able to write all that music.
All that music. And, I mean, like, you know, the Kamehameha Song Contest, that grows out of when her and her siblings, they became so adept at songwriting in choral style that they decided to have contests between themselves. And they would each have their own choir and sing their own. It was like a big sing-off thing. So she is actually very well-trained in classical music tradition. And the interesting about her is that she's just not mimicking Mozart or Bach. She took, like, all those Western principles, but she still held on to a lot of the fundamental things about Hawaiian music that she heard in chant and slacky guitar and all this stuff. So it's more of, like, taking Western classical music ideas and adding a Hawaiian slant to it. It's not just pure mimicry of Mozart kind of thing. So it's kind of an interesting that she took something from outside Hawaii and made it our own. Because, yeah, she's credited with defining, like, the idea of Hawaiian song. A lot of what we consider Hawaiian songwriting is because of her. So, yeah.
Well, the volume, I got once a book of what she had written. It was huge. The volume of music she put out is huge. Now, most people only know probably about four or five of her songs, the average person.
But I think she was quite, she wrote over 150 songs. And the amazing thing is, because she was so well-educated, that she wrote them both in Hawaiian and English, and and the songs that were completely in Hawaiian, she wrote her own English translations to. I mean, she was a very well-educated woman. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's this impression that maybe Hawaiian musicians are, like, out here in the sticks, they don't know anything. She was probably one of the your more educated musicians of the century. I mean, she knew a lot. And her cadre of musicians who were playing in the Royal Waiheke Band very well trained as well.
Famous and amazing and a great reputation, and still a great reputation. And again, going back to the history, there was so much going on before her even, where there would be people going to England and people being exposed to the classical music that was happening in parties and groups there as well. And I believe she did that in her palace as well. She would have parties and have that music, the Royal Hawaiian Band, and I'm sure chamber music probably playing as well, right?
Yeah, we're doing a song on the concert. It's funny. She went with her family to see the Queen of England, and when the Queen of England arrived, they sung "God Save the Queen," and then her family's like, "Hey, we need an anthem like that too." So then the very next week, she wrote one. We're going to be playing that anthem on the
response
to that. To God Save the Queen, because okay, they're royalty, we're royalty, we need a God Save the Queen anthem too, so I'm going to write my own, so we'll have one also.
I've necessarily heard that one.
So we're going to be playing that one.
Well, if you're just tuning in, we're talking about a Jazz Maui presentation happening at the McCoy Studio Theater on Saturday, July 30th. And it's probably like something you haven't heard before. It's the music of Queen Liliuokalani and Brahms, done with this award-winning Mana Music Quartet with cello and violin and viola. And it sounds like stories as well for people to understand. It sounds like you don't just play the music, but you give a little of the background as well.
Well, because we'd heard so many arrangements of these songs where it's very clear that the arranger, like the famous violinist Fritz Kreisler, he toured in Hawaii and he gave a recital and he heard Aloha Oi, and he's a Viennese French soloist from the 1920s.
Wow.
He made an arrangement of Aloha Oi and it sounds as far away from Hawaiian music that you could imagine. And I heard that and I was like, for our arrangements, we want to include elements of chant and hymn song. And so that our arrangements, when you hear them, they sound like string quartet, but they definitely still sound like Hawaiian music. That was one of our primary goals. And so when we were writing the arrangements and rehearsing, our process was we would read the lyrics to each other first, just to try to get inspired, and then try to reinterpret it, like playing the melody. None of us are very fluent in Hawaiian, so we would just read the translations and try to extrapolate what the meaning is. And the thing about these Hawaiian songs, as many people, that there's so many layers of meaning. Like the song can, the lyrics can be about the beautiful waterfall, but it's really about two women who are fighting over this guy. There's so many layers of meaning in it. So we tried to capture that feeling in all of the arrangements. And I don't know how successful it was, but we made the attempt. I know there's a lot of people who make arrangements of Hawaiian tunes where they kind of disregard all that stuff, and it ends up pretty with colorful jazz chords, and it ends up sounding more like a Disney movie. We really tried to keep one foot in the traditional Hawaiian stuff. And I'm actually going to be giving a pre-concert workshop for students to show them the elements of Hawaiian music that we tried to include, like the elements of chant, and then why slacky guitar tuning is the way it is, and the licks they use, why they came about, and then how you could listen for them in our arrangements and see how we're trying to bridge the gap between this indigenous Hawaiian music and the Western classical music that came, and how Hawaiian music, so they weren't mimickers. It's a very fascinating story. Like Sam Leah, the fiddler, he heard about violin and was not able to obtain one to write, so he just made one from scratch by himself.
Really?
You know, so he took the idea of a violin and, you know, rather than just completely mimic it from them, he just said, I'll just make one. Eventually, someone gave him a violin, and I was actually really lucky. I was playing a gig at the museum, and they actually brought out his violin and let me play a couple songs
on it. Oh, my gosh.
Old German violin from the 1800s or something like that.
Oh, what did it sound like? What did you feel like playing that?
It was a beautiful violin, but more, you could tell, you could, it's like how they always say, you can always feel the mono of everyone who's played that violin before. Mm-hmm. So it's a trip in a time machine to play a violin like that.
I'm sure. Yeah. Now, there's an interesting cadence and energy, obviously, that comes in chant, and there's also the calling in of the spirit. Music, of course, has some of that, but not as clearly. So how did you incorporate, when you're trying to do chamber music, which can be rather confined, sometimes chamber, I think, in my mind, I think of classical music, sometimes confined. And then there's this feeling that you get with slack music and other Hawaiian music that kind of feels very loose and open, that isn't confined at all. So I'm trying to imagine, I mean, I do have a piece I could play a little of here, but I'm curious how you were able to blend that confinement of classical music.
There's certain instruments, like the sound of Hawaiian guitar, it has to do a lot with the secret slacky guitar tunings. And I don't know how your listeners are familiar with the slacky guitar tradition, but they don't tune the guitars like normal people do Hawaiians. It used to be like every family would have their own secret guitar tuning. Mm-hmm. And so that's the sound. And then if you were watching a guitar player too closely, they would stop playing because they didn't want you to figure out their secret fingering. That's how secretive they were about it.
I didn't know
that. So a lot of the sound of Hawaiian guitar is, because there's so many different open strings, they hit certain patterns that don't normally occur on the guitar. So we tried to incorporate that. And then also on the album, I don't know how much we're going to incorporate on our concert. On the album, we did open up three or four songs to improvisation, and we invited guest artists to come sit in and improvise. I think on one track, Jake Shomobukuro he does a beautiful improv on Ahiala Makani. And then we had Benny Riefeldt join us for Aloha Oi. Benny Riefeldt is the local boy, went to Roosevelt High School, but now is the music director for Santana. He's like one of the local kids who did super good.
That's all
and
right.
So he joined us for one song, and he did an improvised bass also. Those folks helped us give that element of improvisation that is present often in Hawaiian music. And we also tried to not be too strict on the phrasing. Every time we play these songs, we try to do it a little bit different. But it helps to have the help of those. We have Greg Sardina, the lap steel guitar virtuoso, join us in a couple of songs too, just to help guide us in that area.
So I have two cuts here. One's Imi, my bad eyesight, Imi Ali'i Ke Aloha, and then there's one that's called Kua Pu. Pue Papakalani, which one? Should I do the...
It's a beautiful... Kupu I Papakalani, that's the song that has a specific significance for us. That's the first song in that party that I arranged. And, you know, when we first met. So that's sort of our theme song. And it's a beautiful song. And it has a powerful message, actually, because that song was written while she was imprisoned in the Iolani Palace, you know, at the overthrow of the government. And so But while she was in prison, one of the perks was that her subjects, that they could send her flowers to cheer her up. So she would get daily flowers, right? But there was this one boy who was about 10 years old, and he was very clever, and he ended up being the mayor of Honolulu, because what he would do is he would wrap the flowers in the newspaper of the day so that she would know what was going on in the kingdom as kind of like a secret message. He would sneak the news to her on the flowers and stuff. So we were thinking, you know, the pandemic just came. We feel like we're in prison. She wrote this song when she was locked up in the Iolani Palace. That was part of the reason that her music resonated to us, because we were kind of feeling that same feeling of being, you know, in prison in our own prison. So, and then and out of this kind of negative thing, that such a beautiful thing could come out. That was the thing that got us very interested in her music.
You know, I'm playing it here. I don't think you can hear it while you're talking, but I'm playing it, and it is. Of course, I know this song, but I just didn't remember that's the name of it. But it's a wonderful song. I love this song. Have you had a chance to play it at the Iolani Palace ever? Your music there?
Not yet. We're planning to, though. We've been invited, so, and they actually are selling our CD at the Iolani Palace, so they are very friendly to us. Yeah.
I was able to get in there for a private videotaping for some event when I used to do videotaping. And it's amazing when you're in there. There are ghosts, I swear to God. You feel the energy in that place. It is so, so beautiful. I imagine if you're there playing, you will definitely feel her energy. I mean, she was truly a Renaissance woman that was just truly an inspired woman. And the fact that her music still speaks of her heart and her spirit, all these years later, you know.
Yeah. Her magic as a person, look, even from out of the grave, she's reached out to us in a lot of ways. I mean, so last summer, the Lili Kalani Trust Foundation, I guess Queen Lili Kalani, when she passed away, she put all of her money into a trust fund, and the money is being managed by this foundation. And the job of the foundation is to take care of Hawaii's orphaned and kids who are less fortunate, and through the arts and through music. So when we released the CD, they reached out to us, and they funded us last summer to do a huge two-week string program with less fortunate kids on the Big Island. So even to this day, I mean, her influence is reaching out to change the world through music. It's pretty powerful. I mean, teaching there on her lands in the Big Island with her children, pretty miraculous stuff. I mean, we were playing and teaching these kids Hawaiian music on violins, a lost tradition that's being re-remembered. It's been a really amazing ride, this quartet, in a lot of ways. I mean, we're all very accomplished musicians, and I mean, we've all played all over the world and won international contests. But this exploration of her music for all of us is one of the most powerful experiences that we've all ever done. I mean, it's comparable to playing in Carnegie Hall and any of the big concert halls that we've all had a chance to play in. I mean,
yeah,
it's pretty magical.
I guess Joshua is also a cellist with the Hawaii Symphony Orchestra, and
yes.
Which is wonderful, and he does teaching. And you also do, I guess you do wedding gigs, because I can imagine how any wedding, you know, some formal weddings love to have chamber groups, and it must be very interesting for you to get out there and do that as well, you know, in the full, probably the full tux thing at the weddings. Do you do that as well?
Oh yeah, we do pretty good on weddings here. Josh in particular is turning out to be the wedding guru of Honolulu. If you need a wedding, he's the guy to call. He can get any group, any size, any style together. Yeah.
Well, as a musician, you kind of have to do that. I really do think, you know, I mean, unless you have a manager and agent, but a lot of people here that I know do not have managers or agents. You're your own manager and your agent. It's an interesting thing, too, because, you know, I've done like 13 CDs, and I just did my latest one, which actually has more of a classical tendency mm-hmm. than the other ones I've done. It's called Love Conquers All. But I, you know, I had to make that decision where you probably had to, too. Do you do CDs or not? To do CDs or not to do CDs? It was a hard decision.
Yeah, it's a hard decision.
Yeah, yeah. Did you decide to do CDs?
We did decide to do CDs just to have something to sell. And well, see, I'm a little bit older than the guys in the group, but Josh and Eric, they're kings of this new crowdfunding and social media thing.
Uh-huh.
So they were able to fundraise
for all the production of all that stuff. They're remarkable that way.
Wow. Yeah. That's wonderful. God, I'm proud of them. That's amazing. Good on them. You know, it is also interesting, too, on something like this. Have you found or do you think you'll be finding other groups throughout the world wanting to understand and play the Queen's music? And do you think this is going to spread?
Oh, I think it's definitely going to spread. Like, I've had a chance because my day job is I'm a violin teacher. And the last two springs, I've traveled to the National Convention Conference of the American String Teachers Association. And I've presented sessions on the Queen's music. And it's always a huge hit. People don't realize how much they love Hawaiian music until they come see the session. And it always leaves people weepy. It's a really powerful, when you hear the story behind the music and how lush and sincere it is, it's maybe not as complex as the Shostakovich string quartet, but I mean, it speaks so directly to the heart. It's really hard for it not to have universal appeal and speak to people at a certain level, because Hawaiian music, it's different than the Western classical music that I grew up with. Like, Western classical music, it's designed to play perfectly. You buy a ticket, you listen, sit in the concert hall, and it's all great, and we can appreciate the beauty, blah, blah, blah. Hawaiian music, you know, in the olden days, it wasn't entertainment. It was the thing that held society together. I mean, in a culture that doesn't have written language, music was the one that told people what the laws were. It was the way that you remembered the stories of history. It was the way you remembered all your ancestors. It was literally the thing that held the fabric of your life together, music. So, you know, this music is much more powerful than you know, like, I just played with the symphony Star Wars. That's beautiful movie music, but it's entertainment music. It's not holding society together, the soundtrack of Star Wars. In the same way, some of these chants are literally delineating the laws or opening weddings and this kind of thing. It served a much more powerful role, music, in the old Hawaiian culture. And that's the side of it. I mean, if you talk to really serious Hawaiian musicians, they hold on to the sacredness of the art in a way that a lot of jaded classical musicians have forgotten. And I don't know if classical musicians ever really thought of music in the way that they do, you know?
You know, I hadn't ever really considered I'd never thought of the violin being played in the 1800s and with the Hawaiian music and an ukulele and a violin. I had never really considered that.
Oh, yeah. It's very interesting. Like, if you go, my friend Kylan, who is more of the researcher, and I just read what he writes. I mean, he found some pictures, 1850. It's like an outreach trip of the Royal Hawaiian Band. It's a band of like 8 members. Front row is the 3 fiddles, a flute player, a cellist, an upright bass, maybe an ukulele, and 2 guitar players. I mean,
amazing.
And they're all in the Royal Hawaiian Band uniform. I mean, it was like a thing.
Amazing.
It wasn't just like a random thing. I mean, these people. Colin was even telling me a story. I don't know how much true it is. So the Royal Hawaiian Band, you know, they would often go to the World's Fair, and they'd start off playing the band instruments. And then just to show off, they'd put down the band instruments and pick up the string instruments. And people were just in awe of the virtuosity of these people who were multi-instrumentalists, could play everything. You know, I mean, it's a story of Hawaiian music that has been forgotten for a lot of reasons. I mean, Kylan's theory is that because when the monarchy was overthrown, they forced all the musicians to decide, either you pledge your allegiance to the new government or we won't let you play music in Honolulu anymore.
Oh, really?
And a lot of them said, I'm not gonna pledge my allegiance to the new government. So they left, and they just started touring. Yeah, so a lot of this music was not even heard in Hawaii. It was heard more in Europe and mainland. I mean, there's this one guy, the former band leader of the Royal Hawaiian Band, Mikia Makai, I think I mispronounced his name. I mean, he was touring to crowds of 10,000 people on the mainland, him and his string band. I mean, he was a huge deal. I mean, he was a virtuoso flutist and piccolo player, and John Philip Sousa tried to recruit him for the John Philip Sousa band, and he turned him down because he said, my gigs are bigger than your gigs. It would be a step down for me to tour with you. I mean, these guys were just not like country bumpkins. These were like rock stars.
Oh, they were. And when you think about it, there were people that were royalty. I mean, when they were entertainers, the top people around the country would come to hear the Royal Hawaiian Band, and they would play for the diplomats. Did they ever get to the Queen? Did they ever get to Europe, the Royal Hawaiian Band, when they were, have you ever heard if they ever, when the Queen was able to travel to get there?
I don't know if they went there, but I know when the musicians left, They were very big in Paris, particularly all the lap steel guitar guys have a huge following. Like if you go to France, a lot of people like ukuleles. It traces us back to that era when they all went through there. Yeah,
it's pretty interesting. I love that you realize and embrace this whole history of what was going on during that time and carry that with the music that you do and the stories that you tell. I mean, it is a fascinating thing, actually. Was there the music that was done by her? Did she have scores that she kept that are in the museums or anywhere? Have you seen any of her scores?
I've seen, there's an album of her music that's sort of considered the scholarly text. And she wrote principally because that was where her passion is, choir music. So it's all notated by her in, soprano, alto, tenor, bass.
Uh-huh.
Most of it. Yeah.
Amazing.
So our job to translate the soprano, alto, tenor, bass into a string quartet version, that was the trick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Wow. I just love what you did for this. People can go to your site because you have a lovely site that tells some of these stories and where people can get it. Do you also have these, your latest album that you just won, the Nahoku for, is that on your website or do people go to Amazon Music or where do they get that?
I think you can. It can be heard on Spotify and all the streamers.
Streamings,
and then
yeah.
It's also you can also purchase it on the Mono Music home website, which is I think monomusic.com, I think. Yeah. We're selling it there. Yeah.
Of course, for the concert you're going to be doing on July 30th, again 6:00 for that lovely courtyard performance. That's going to be like the pre-show. And you're going to have members of the Maui Pops and Maui Symphony there with you? Tell me about that.
Well, that one, I guess, is because the organizer from Jazz Maui is this guy, Brian Neal, who I've known for years.
Yeah.
And I think he wanted to have some local musicians perform in the courtyard. And they're actually, I'm very good friends with them. Michelle Anchetta is, I used to play with her when I used to fly over and play with Ulivea Guerrero. She's a fine cellist.
Mm.
And then Rona Lundgren, she's a violinist. She's she's been there many years, but she came from Europe, I think. She's a very talented teacher and violinist. Yeah, and I guess the third person is new to the Maui. I haven't met her yet, but I'm sure she's just as good as Rona and Michelle. So,
and you're going to have...
Well,
we only have a minute, but there is going to be a clinic presentation you're giving as well, right?
Yep. Yeah, and the clinic is going to be telling the story. I'm going to give a survey of Hawaiian history, starting from chant all the way to present, and we'll touch on chant, the influence of slacky and choral music. And in the end, we'll end with a kanakapila on hi'ilawe. And everybody bring your instruments or your voice. And if this is a hands-on presentation, we're all going to be making music the whole time.
Where's that going to be?
It's going to be also at the MAC. Yeah, and so just whatever instrument, violin, viola, cello, bass, ukulele, guitar, flute, bassoon, trombone, whatever. And we'll try to apply principles of Hawaiian music making to whatever instrument or your voice you want to bring.
I love it.
And hopefully we'll end the session in a big jam session on this hi'ilawe.
That would be fantastic. Was that same day a little earlier?
Same day, 2 hours earlier.
2 hours, that'd be 4:00 at the MAC.
Yes.
Wonderful. And people can go to MauiArts.org to get tickets. The McCoy's not that big, so I recommend you getting your tickets right away. Because this is a very special event. I didn't quite have a handle on what it was going to be like until I talked to you, Duane. You're very, very good at expressing yourself and understanding the whole concept and what's going on with this. So I appreciate you taking the time to talk story and tell us all about what's going on with Modern Music Quartet.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. And thank you for being so dedicated to this whole process and to making that music and not just making it about music, but the story and the spirit behind the music, which you keep alive through the music, which is a wonderful gift. So thank you for that, and a big aloha.
Oh, thank you.
Aloha.